Senate will come to order. A couple minutes late, the computer wasn't programmed to get here at this time, I guess, so we roll call by the chief clerk.
Roll call for Thursday, February 25th. Anderson?
Here.
Bebout?
Here.
Burns?
Here.
Case?
Here.
Coe?
Here.
Cooper?
Here.
Dockstetter?
Here.
Elliott?
Here.
Esquivel?
Here.
Geis?
Here.
Hastert?
Here.
Honeycutt?
Here.
Jennings?
Here.
Johnson?
Here.
Landon?
Here.
Larson?
Here.
Martin?
Here.
Massey?
Here.
Meyer? Meyer-S?
Here.
Nicholas?
Here.
Perkins?
Here.
Peterson? Ross?
Here.
Schiffer?
Here.
Scott? Sessions?
Here.
Townsend?
Here.
Von Flatern?
Here.
President Hines?
Here.
Meyer?
Excused.
Peterson?
Excused.
Scott?
Excused.
27 present, 3 excused.
Prayer by Pastor Nelson.
Well, one of the prominent characters in the Old Testament is a guy named David, and he was a king over Israel, and during his reign he did some really smart things, and he did some really not so smart things. He led his nation to some great heights, and in the midst of that, he experienced some tremendous moral failures. But if you keep on reading that story, what you find a little later is that God never gave up on him. And at one point, in fact, God says, David is a man after my own heart. And I read that and I think, wow, what a reputation that would be to have as a man or a woman after God's own heart. I don't know where you are in your life in terms of success or failure, but what this says to me is that no matter how high I climb on the ladder of success or how big of a hole I make in the ground when I crash and burn, God looks at more than just what I do. He looks at what's inside of me. He looks at what's in my heart. And so this morning I want to pray for your heart and for mine. Lord, I pray this day for the hearts of the men and the women who make up the Wyoming Senate. I pray that they would be good-hearted people and make decisions that aim to benefit not just their constituents, but all the people of Wyoming. And I pray that they would be strong-hearted people so that they are able to do what needs to be done, even when it's not the easy or the popular choice. And I pray that they would be soft-hearted people as they consider the difficulty and the painful situations of some of the people in our state. And finally, Lord, I pray that we would all be described as men and women after your heart. In Christ's name, amen.
Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Reading, correction, approval of the journal, Senator Dockstetter.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, the confirmation appointment section has an inadvertent error. The journal shows Brian Monteith appointed to the School Facilities Commission, representing School Facilities Planning and Management. The journal has been corrected to show Mr. Monteith representing the State Educational Program for Public Schools. With this correction, your journal committee reports that the journal of February 24th, 2010 has been read and recommends that it be approved.
Are there any objections? There being none, the journal report is adopted as correct, as corrected. Doctor of the day today is John Healy, MD from Cheyenne. And the nurse for the day is Celine Barber, Cheyenne Regional Medical Center. Thought for the day, middle age is when you've met so many people that every new person you met reminds you of someone else. Reports from standing committees.
February the 25th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 17, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Massey, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, Townsend, Senator Nicholas, Chairman. February the 25th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 88, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Massey, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, and Townsend, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
Bills on second reading. House Bill 5, second reading of the bill.
House Bill 5, sponsored by the Corporations Committee, Insurance Risk-Based Capital Revisions.
House Bill 5, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 6, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 6, sponsored by the Corporations Committee, County Officials, Administrative and Fiscal Duties.
House Bill 6, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 22, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 22, sponsored by Representative R. Anderson, Streamline Sales Use Tax Amendments.
House Bill 22, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 24, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 24, sponsored by Representative Cohey, Insurance Requirements for Newly Purchased Vehicles.
House Bill 24, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 25, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 25, sponsored by the Labor Committee, Child Care Development Fund.
House Bill 25, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 26, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 26, sponsored by the Labor Committee, Medical Review Panel.
House Bill 26, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 27, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 27, sponsored by the Transportation Committee, Armed Forces License Plate Fee and Distribution.
House Bill 27, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 32, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 32, sponsored by Representative Stubson, Board of Nursing Continuing Jurisdiction.
House Bill 32, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 41, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 41, sponsored by the Education Committee, School Finance Distance Education.
House Bill 41, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 46, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 46, sponsored by the Select Water Committee, Omnibus Water Bill Planning.
House Bill 46, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 49, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 49, sponsored by Representative Madden, Manufacturing Sales and Use Tax Exemption.
House Bill 49, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 56, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 56, sponsored by the School Facilities Committee, Bonded Indebtedness Mill Levy Supplement.
House Bill 56, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 66, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 66, sponsored by Representative Lubnow, Governmental Claims Act Process.
House Bill 66 having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 84, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 84, sponsored by Representative Bilkrey, Gold Star License Plates.
House Bill 84, having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 86, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 86, sponsored by Representative Millen, Medicare Elderly Care.
House Bill 86, having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 101, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 101, sponsored by Representative R. Anderson, electricity generated from wind taxation.
There is an amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
House Bill 101, second reading amendment number 1 to engrossed copy, page 8, line 15.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I would move second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 101. Mr. President, you know, I love eastern forests. I truly do. I like to go visit them and have all those trees, and I love to go see the redwoods and those magnificent tall trees, but after a couple days in that country, I start to get nervous, and I miss our wonderful, beautiful vistas that we have in Wyoming. When I was a little kid, I used to hate driving from Shoshone to Casper. I thought that was the most godforsaken country there had ever been on the planet. But here we are in this desert, and I love that drive today. I love that drive. I would do that every day. Mr. President, I love our wide-open country, our vistas, and I can't do much about that, I suspect. But I can realize that in this time when all those vistas are going to change, because we are going to have maybe as much as 15 times more wind development, the one thing I can do something about is the other thing I love about Wyoming. That's Wyoming's wildlife, its open space, its natural resources. I think we should try to mitigate these impacts now, and that's what this amendment proposes to do, is to take 1% from the counties. That's already an earmark. Don't tell me that I'm adding to earmarks by, you know, we already have an earmark in the bill. Take 1% from the county share, 1% from the state share, and direct it towards the income account, not the corpus of the Wildlife Trust Fund, so that it can be used to start mitigating these impacts now. Because the problem is now, Mr. President.
Senator Schiffer.
As we've worked House Bill 101, both in committee and prior to that, kind of putting it together, one of the underlying principles that we had is that let's go slowly, let's look at what's needed, let's look at the impacts, particularly as they relate to taxation, because, you know, it's the revenue committee, but let's proceed slowly, let's try and understand how we do it right. I understand the thrust of this amendment. I applaud the sponsor looking out there and saying we got to take care of this habitat. But the reason I ask you to go very cautiously on this, as we worked the bill and as we worked it in committee and as we put the bill together, I've tried to keep a list of what, if we're going to address it in the interim, what are the areas we need to address? And wildlife impacts is on that list. What I'm suggesting is give us the time. We've got a delayed date. Give us the time to look at what the impacts are and what the financial draws, so to speak, that might entail or may not entail. And let us proceed with a complete picture that weighs the impacts of wind development, particularly as it relates to taxation. I ask you to approach this very... No, actually, I ask you, don't vote for this amendment. Never mind caution. Don't vote for it. Who said that?
Senator Larson. Senator Anderson.
Okay. Very briefly, you know, I can really appreciate what the sponsor of the amendment has said. In fact, I really agree with a lot of his concern, but I think along the lines of what the chairman of revenue has said, that this is certainly an issue, but maybe it's a bit before its time. As we look at this revenue and taxation and distribution collection, there are virtually hundreds of variables in there that I think need to be more articulately addressed in the interim study, and that's really part of it. It becomes so emotional at this point, and if we can get good data and discussions with the other issues, I think it would be a more appropriate time. I, too, would wish you to defeat this amendment.
Further discussion? Senator Case, for your second time.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. I appreciate those sentiments, but it's pretty obvious to me that some ground's already been staked in the bill. We've already said, my golly, the poor impact on local governments. You know, and we've talked about that in other forums where we've talked about the roads and the bridges and all of that concrete and temporary construction workers and just issues like that. So we've already said, this is, we're going to do this tax. It is down the road, but it is important that we take a stand for local government. Well, okay. I think that's fair, Mr. President. It is also just as important that the even bigger impacts are to our wildlife and natural resources. I, in the great scheme of Wyoming's history, those are much bigger than the impacts on Wyoming's local governments. We'll get through. Our roads will be ratty, and we'll fix them, and our bridges will get fixed, et cetera, et cetera. We'll get through that. If we lose our wildlife heritage, we lose that forever. So we need to also stake a little ground in that area, Mr. President. That's why I bring this amendment.
We're voting on second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 10. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Amendment have failed. House Bill 101, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 109, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 109, sponsored by Representative Hammonds, compulsory school attendance 3.
House Bill 109, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 110, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 110, sponsored by Representative McComey, Higher Education Endowment Challenge Program.
There is an amendment. Reading clerk, please read in the amendment.
House Bill 110, second reading amendment number 1, page 2, line 11.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What this amendment does is the subject we talked about before, and it says that prior to receipt of any substantial endowment gift, the donor shall be notified by the foundation that there may or may not be any state matching funds available for the gift. I think it's important that they know that going in, and that's all the amendment does.
Senator Larson, I'd ask you to move the amendment, please.
Excuse me, Mr. President. I would move amendment number 1 to Senate file.
Further discussion? The question is, shall second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 110 pass? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment has passed. House Bill 110, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 124.
House Bill 124, sponsored by Representative Brown, Lien Statement Notice.
House Bill 124, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Joint Resolution Number 8, first reading, second reading of the House Joint Resolution.
House Joint Resolution 8, sponsored by Representative Davidson, Opposition to Northern Rockies Ecosystem Protection Act.
House Joint Resolution Number 8, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall it be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Bills on third reading and final passage. Senate File 1, third reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 1, sponsored by the Appropriations Committee, General Government Appropriations 2, an act to make appropriations for the biennium commencing July 1, 2010, and ending June 30, 2012. Be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
There are amendments. Reading clerk, please read in the First Amendment, which is third reading amendment number 28.
Senate File 1, third reading amendment number 28, multiple budgets affected. Section 1, Office of the Governor.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, I move third reading amendment number 28 to Senate File 1. Mr. President, what this amendment does, it goes into, the governor's budget. It goes down to his, is traditionally known as his emergency fund. That's funded at $1 million. He has spent about $70,000 out of the million. It moves $685,000 of that money over to the Mental Health and Substance Abuse Division for use in the telehealth pilot project. This does not add money. It takes money that's already sitting in that account. I did visit with the governor about this and received support for it. What this does is this starts us, again, when we talked about it the other day, a pilot project that is underway. It's privately driven, provide the software and hardware for the availability of telepsychiatric services across the state. The plan that's laid out in this is to start with the emergency rooms in the 26 hospitals in the state. If they opt in, we'll provide that service first. The next step is to provide it with the community mental health centers and to tie it in with the state hospital. Down the road, there is interest in tying it also with our corrections department for delivery of telepsychiatry. The firms that are involved, the software and hardware firms, are local firms. They're not very big, but they have a proven track record. The beta test, and a beta test is where you actually get a patient and then provide psychiatric services from a distance location. In this case, we use Sheridan and the Memorial Hospital here in this county. It worked. It worked well. Both the attending psychiatric nurse and the psychiatrist here in this community, a distance of about 320 miles away, it worked well. The next steps are to visit each of the hospitals and say, this is potentially what we can do in your emergency room. We can deliver you this service, particularly to those in an emergency doctor who is not conversant, not comfortable, making a psychiatric prescription, particularly in a Title 25 commitment proceeding, will have the resources of a psychiatrist at hand. It is a step forward. If you look at all of the surrounding states, every single one of them has this type of service. Montana is the one I'm most familiar with. They've had it for 11 years. If you have what's comparable to our Title 25, for example, in Forsyth, Montana, they can immediately access a psychiatrist in Billings. I mean, it's doable. It's a step-by-step process. I'm very comfortable having it provided in the private sector. This nurtures our telecommunications industry. It's a fledgling industry, but I think we can nurture it. It's a benefit to the entire state, to every single community, to have psychiatric services available, particularly in an involuntary mental health commitment process. I ask for your support for this amendment.
Further discussion on the amendment?
Question.
Question is, shall the third reading amendment, number 28, to Senate File 1, pass? All in favor say aye. Roll call have been requested. Does not change the total dollars, just the distribution. The roll call will be called by the chief clerk.
Bebout? Burns?
Aye.
Case? Coe?
Aye.
Cooper? Dockstader?
No.
Elliott?
Aye.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Honeycutt?
Aye.
Jennings?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Larson?
No.
Martin?
Aye.
Massey?
Aye.
Meyer? Meyer-S? Nicholas? Perkins? Peterson? Ross? Schiffer? Scott? Sessions? Townsend? Bonflatern? President Hines? Bebout? Meyer excused. 21 ayes. 8 noes. Oh. Landon, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 20 ayes, 9 noes, 1 excused.
Well, you vote amendment number 28 has passed. Amendment number 1. Reading clerk, please read in the amendment.
Senate File 1, third reading amendment number 1, budget affected, Section 2, Secretary of State.
Senator Nicholas.
Chairman, I move third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 1. The folks, what this does is it puts back into the Secretary of State's budget funding for these notifications. I offer the amendment. I'll be voting no.
Discussion on the amendment. The question is, shall first, third, oh, Senator Scott.
Mr. President, reluctantly rising to speak on and for an amendment because I think, frankly, that this is probably going to reduce the amount of expense and increase the income to the state. The Secretary of State has cut out mailings of the initial notifications for corporations, and they'll let people get delinquent, and then they'll mail out a notice saying that you are delinquent. And that has some legal consequences for people. It's a really a trap for the smaller companies to be unwary. I think you'll wind up mailing out about the same number of notices, but instead of doing it ahead, you do it after they're already delinquent. And it's going to cause a mess down there. And frankly, I think we need to do this. I think the easier way would have been to deal with their budget in some other ways, but this is the way we have available, and I think we better do it or our constituents are going to have a good deal of trouble. And I think the state's going to wind up with as much expense as it was going to have anyhow.
Senator Bonflatern.
Thank you, Mr. President. Speaking on and against the amendment, I am one of the people they caught, or I was caught because I didn't file. I did not receive the notice. But I also know that the electronic age is taking over, and I just need to get used to it, even though I did, according to my email, said I did file online, and for some reason they still didn't receive it. But I do believe that you better learn to live by the computer, so I speak against this amendment.
Senator Burns.
President, Secretary of State's office, by statute, has to send out notices. I believe it's 2 days after your due date to let you know that you have not filed. And I don't believe there are, for the next 30 days, there's any ramifications. Basically, no harm, no foul. The Secretary of State's office was sending out the previous notices as a courtesy. There was no law on their part. So basically, it's a policy decision on the part of this body whether we want the business people of Wyoming to get that notice ahead of time. And if we do, it's going to cost us just shy of $90,000 to do it.
Senator Townsend.
Thank you, Mr. President. I believe I have a better settlement or a better idea than spending $90,000 is that the Secretary of State send each one of the small businesses that need to file a calendar with that notice on there. I've been in business a long time, and we have a simple calendar that has the due dates of all the permits and deadlines. I think it would be a good lesson for the businesses to mind their responsibilities. However, it could be that instead of after 2 days after the deadline, the notice could be before that and warn them that it's coming, like my insurance company has a very sinister notice that they send me. They say, if you don't pay by Friday, you will not have any insurance. So it could be that we could move that date of notice farther up the line so we won't get in trouble.
Further discussion on Amendment 1? The question is, shall third reading Amendment number 1 pass? The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson?
No.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
Aye.
Dockstader?
No.
Elliott?
No.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
No.
Honeycutt?
No.
Jennings?
No.
Johnson?
No.
Landon?
No.
Larson?
Aye.
Martin? Massey?
No.
Meyer excused. Meyer S.
No.
Nicholas?
No.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Ross?
No.
Schiffer?
No.
Scott?
Aye.
Sessions?
No.
Townsend?
No.
Von Flatern?
No.
President Hines?
No.
Closing vote? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 5 ayes, 24 noes, 1 excused.
Well, you vote Senate Amendment, Third Reading Amendment number 1 have failed. Senate Amendment, the Third Reading Amendment number 2.
Senate File 1, Third Reading Amendment number 2, Budgets Affected, Section 2, Secretary of State.
Senator Myers' amendment. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. No, I think our colleague probably had intended to go for one amount and then a second amount, depending on his strategy. This is the same amendment. I think he probably would have withdrawn it after the first one passed, but I'm not sure. Should we just move it and vote it? Let's go ahead and move it. I'll move third reading number 2 to Senate File 1. This is the same discussion as the last one, was just a higher amount.
Question being called on third reading amendment number 2. Chief Clerk, call the roll.
Anderson?
No.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
Dockstader?
No.
Elliott?
No.
Esquibel?
No.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
No.
Honeycutt?
No.
Jennings?
No.
Johnson?
No.
Landon?
No.
Larson?
No.
Martin?
No.
Massey?
No.
Meyer excused. Meyer S.
No.
Nicholas.
No.
Perkins.
No.
Peterson.
No.
Ross.
No.
Schiffer.
No.
Scott.
No.
Sessions.
No.
Townsend.
No.
Von Flatern.
No.
President Hines.
No.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 1 aye, 28 noes, 1 excused.
While you vote, amendment number 2 has failed. We're on third reading amendment number 25 to Senate File 1. Reading clerk, please read in the amendment.
Senate File 1, third reading amendment number 25. A budget's affected. Section 3, State Auditor.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President, and I move third reading amendment number 25 to Senate File 1. Ladies and gentlemen, what this does is if you go over to page 7 of your budget, you look at the state auditor budget, there's a $25,900,000 number there that had been set aside, recommended by the governor to address the retirement payroll system. We have addressed this issue separately in the bill. So it seems appropriate to remove this from the budget, and then the funding stays with the bill. It's already profiled, so I would urge your support.
Discussion on amendment number 25. Senator Sessions.
Mr. Chairman, I would urge us not to, for the simple reason that we don't have any idea what's going to happen with the bill that left here or whatever else is going to happen. I know we're not supposed to refer to that, but I think this is a very interesting move to take this money right out of it so people, in essence, can't get their hands on it, which I think is really not a right thing to do for the rest of the body, for all 90 of us. So, thank you.
For the discussion before the sponsor takes its second term, Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. Folks, once again, the funding is with the bill. This was the governor's rec, and you wouldn't want to put this in leave it in the bill, have the governor veto the, or leave it in the budget, have the governor veto the bill, and having this money stay there. Governor, what we're going to send the governor, our proposal was, which addresses the problem fully and completely, this money is no longer needed in this line item. And it doesn't belong in the budget anymore because this isn't the legislature's plan.
Question is, shall third reading amendment number 25 to Senate File 1 pass? Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Dockstader, Elliott, Esquibel, Geis, Hastert, Honeycutt, Jennings, Johnson, Landon, Larson, Martin, Massey, Meyer excused, Meyer S., Nicholas, Perkins, Peterson,
aye.
Ross,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Sessions,
no.
Townsend,
aye.
Von Flatern,
no.
President Hines.
Aye.
Cooper, aye to no. Esquibel, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 19 ayes, 10 noes, 1 excused.
By your vote, the third reading amendment 25 has passed. Third reading amendment number 3. Reading clerk, please read in the amendment.
Senate file 1, third reading amendment number 3, budgets affected. Section 15, Attorney General.
Senator Cove.
Well, Mr. President, I move third reading amendment number 3 to Senate file 1. This amendment goes into the Attorney General's section and deletes the new paragraph that was put in where we transfer the duties of the school finance litigation production that we have here in the legislature down to the AG's office. Just a little background in this issue. And the good chairman of appropriations and I had a lengthy discussion about it a couple of times. And I know what he's going to say on this. And we are going to have a good debate. But there's some things to consider here. First thing we need to consider is that this office was created by the legislature in 2006 on a recommendation from the governor's office, the current governor's office, because we had been outsourcing significant amounts of work, remembering that we've spent over $4.2 million on litigation. That's why this office was created. Now, if you look at some of the things that this office does, it tried and appealed the Campbell 4 decision successfully. Campbell 4, as it came out, requires continuous monitoring and review of the state school finance and school capital construction. Now, this office is also intricately involved in school CapCon. We know the discussions we've had on school CapCon. We know the difficulties we've had with school CapCon. We know how school CapCon is joined at the hip now with K-12. This office has extensive experience at that. Handles all the litigation and administrative hearings regarding school finance. Now I want to talk about one other issue here. We're going into recalibration. I think it's going to be one of the most involved and important things that we do when it comes to the future of K-12, particularly knowing the difficulties that we're looking at out there a couple of bienniums away with funding. This office has significant experience in what we're going to try to do with recalibration. Just to give you some background on the office, there's 3 people employed in this office. The state's counsel currently, and I'm going to tell you what he makes, because that's going to be some of the issues we're going to talk about. He makes $170,000. He has an administrative assistant, an assistant state counsel that is funded commensurate with the AG's office. The counsel that we have on board that's been successful, I think done a great job for us, has 25 years experience as a litigation attorney. I'm not a litigation attorney. You're about to hear from one in a few minutes who's a good friend of mine. School finance and school capital construction, remember one thing that we're doing here. We're going to spend $1.6 billion. This is big dollars. We need to have on board, I think, the best counsel with the most institutional memory, the best track record that we can find out there. This is of key importance as we deal with K-12. This office also maintains a very extensive electronic database. With that, Mr. President, I'd ask that you support the amendment. I think it's a key time in what we're talking about here with education, particularly with recalibration and the situation we find ourselves with school capital construction, and this office has significant experience at that. I'd ask that you support the amendment.
Senator Sessions.
Mr. Chairman, I would rise in support of this amendment, and the reason I am coming down on this side of it is when our current governor was first elected, he asked me what he should do about school finance, and we were, if you'll remember, 7 years ago or so, we were involved in a lawsuit. We had outside counsel. I sat in on 2 of those, one district court hearing and one Supreme Court hearing. And I'm just going to come out and say it. The counsel was extremely incompetent. I couldn't believe it. In one of the district things, one of the district hearings, he even admitted he'd not read the first Supreme Court decision. So, and the governor looked at me and he said, oh, I can't do that. He says, these are the guys that know. Well, then he received the first bill. And then that's when it ended. And that's when we brought our own people on board to gain the expertise to appear before the courts, do the whole thing. And that body of knowledge is there. And if we wipe it out, we do away with it, then we're right back to where we were 10 years ago with not really depending upon what we have in-house. And I think it's imperative that we keep it based upon what we've gone through for the last few years. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Nicholas.
Mr. President, thank you. On and against the amendment. Folks, I want to explain to you how a little bit about how we bring ourselves here today, and what I really want to persuade to you is that there is an institutional long view aspect that we have taken and our predecessors have taken that's a better way to proceed. And if you look at the long horizon, this is a function that needs to be normalized within the Attorney General's office. Now, this position doesn't transfer anybody to anywhere. All that happened is some years ago while we were engaged in litigation, one of our members put into the budget a budget amendment to increase the pay of a single person in the budget. So first time that I've seen it ever happen where we actually go into a budget and actually pick out an employee out there and say we're going to designate that employee be paid more well above the pay bands. Now, I'm not shocked by the amount that he gets paid. We paid the CIO that. I've got a list over in the my JAC office. We pay a lot of people in our state government in the range of 180. We've got doctors that are being paid that amount. We've got professors and over in Laramie being paid that month, that amount, not for teaching, but for an administrative position. So there are a lot of people being paid that amount. And in fact, if the AG decides to keep this attorney and pay him that a fund, I don't care. He can go over to the governor's office and receive the pay. But what happened is that when the footnote went onto the budget, it sort of insulated that person from the AG's office, and he sort of picked up a team, developed a team, and moved his office outside the office and sort of been on his own, not underneath the Attorney General, and principally because the Attorney General believes that the legislature has said there's a person out there that you can't touch. Well, let me tell you how it should work. You know, I've been practicing law for a long time. I've served in the Attorney General's office in my career. There's an Attorney General downstairs that I actually served underneath for a couple of years of my career, one of the finest lawyers that I've had a chance to work with. Throughout the Attorney General's office, there is a lot of Attorney Generals. You don't know them. They're equally bright, equally skilled, and any one of them, given that opportunity, could undertake and do the same role with equal zealousness and competency. But here's what the statute provides. We have what's called an Office of the Attorney General. And the Attorney General's office, by statute, is to prosecute and defend all suits instituted by or against the state of Wyoming, the prosecution and defense of which is not otherwise provided by law. He's to represent all of the state officers and agencies. He represents the LSO. He represents us. If you're sued, he represents you. These attorneys generals represent all aspects of the government. Now, what happens, done properly, the Attorney General dedicates the staff. And in cases of school litigation, he would have a first seat, second seat, third seat, maybe even a fourth seat. And he would always make sure that people are moving up the seats to always make sure at any given time that you have two or three people that you could go to. We've lost that. In addition, the Attorney General would be himself be knowledgeable, not as skilled as his attorneys, but he would be knowledgeable of the issues. Now, law is a discursive profession. Law practiced best is when lawyers are meeting together, talking about their problems, discussing the problems. That's why oftentimes you go to a law firm, because you make sure you hire lawyers that are discussing the issues, because you get a better product. We get a better product because we bring in an outside attorney general every few years who brings outside skills. And all the lawyers inside the office confer with him. He makes a judgment. Are you putting enough effort into it? Are you thinking about this? By moving an attorney out, we've lost that. Historically, you could walk down to the attorney general and ask him questions about school finance. He could answer, and he shouldn't answer it. He should be, when the attorney general opinions come through that you see, opinion is issued out here, it's circulated, but finally, before it gets issued, the attorney general signs off on it, makes sure all the I's are crossed, or dotted, the T's are crossed.
Fine.
Thank you.
Senator Jennings.
Mr. President, I know going through recalibration with the system we have now worked great. We ask a question, there's an answer. My worry would be is if we go in, as we go into recalibration again, we ask a question, and it's, let me look it up, I'll get back to you. I mean, there's a short amount of time that we're going into this, and that institutional knowledge needs to be there. What I would ask on the last presentation was a great description on how a law office and the AG's office should run, but in that description, it was, we've created this position that has a wall around it and can't be touched. Why are we wanting to touch it now? Why? What's the rush? Why do we need to come in here as we're going into recalibration with the problems we have in Capcom? Why do we need to reorganize it now? Why do we need to reach out there and touch that right now? Let's support this amendment. Let's get through the legal things that we have to do. Remember, this is the first time in, 25, 30 years that we're not in some kind of education litigation. That's a gold star we ought to put on this system and the way we have it set up right now. Let's support the amendment.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I'll be brief. We heard on this side the statement, let me tell you how it should work. We've heard on this side, let me tell you how it does work. There's a simple principle with go with what you know. You know the current arrangement works. It's been proven to work. And of all times to work in these times that are approaching in regard to recalibration, I would hope that you'd support the amendment.
Senator Vival.
Thank you, Mr. President. I, too, would ask that you support this amendment, but maybe my colleague from Laramie or Albany County can tell me why it's not a good idea when I make my arguments. As we go through recalibration, and just like we did when we started off with the Campbell County cases, and whether the state won or lost, and there's all kinds of opinions, we spent an incredible amount of money on outside counsel. And I've been involved in litigation in my life, and it seems to me that what I've always tried to do is you prepare for the worst that might happen, because it usually does. And as you go into that, you want to have the best advice as you move forward, depending on what may come of it. And you can make a heck of an argument that when this recalibration process is over, regardless of what the select committee comes up with, there are going to be people that are not going to like it. We may be right back in court. If we're going to be there, we should have the best person that knows the most about it be there to represent us. Now, if that means we have him in the AG's office and we do that, that's a different argument. But either way, the important thing is to have him. I think this amendment makes sure that we do, so I would ask the body to support it.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and against the amendment, I think that the reason you do it now is because there is no litigation now. Are you going to wait? Are you going to want to do it if there is litigation in the future? When are you going to do it then? The other reason you do it now is because you need to have this expertise reside within the Attorney General's office. A few years ago, there was a lawyer in our town, practiced by himself, had a full caseload. Well, he was a fairly young man, and he died of a heart attack. All of a sudden, his cases are being shoveled out everywhere else. Now, what you're doing is you're repositing all the knowledge and all the experience in one individual. If you don't bring that inside the Attorney General's office at a time when there isn't litigation and something happens down the road, then we are in even a bigger pickle. Now's the time to do it because we're not in litigation. Now's the time to do it because we've got a year to get up to speed while we approach recalibration. I urge you to support the amendment and get this expertise back in the House where it belongs and under the Attorney General where it belongs.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would urge... Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Whatever the good senator was for again. I would urge you to vote in favor of the amendment. I've been involved with that probably since the beginning, and I would ask those of you who have been here long enough to remember when we had a lot of outside counsel and how expensive it was and where it's going. I've heard a lot of discussion about why it should be. It should be Attorney General and the good chairman of Appropriations gave a very eloquent reason. Never once did I hear him mention the legislature, that the legislature has input into this. That's my concern. The Attorney General's office itself, through the period we've been going through this, has had transitions and people come, people go. The Attorney General, I think we've had three in the last few years. So that isn't, I don't think, a reason. We have institutional knowledge that was created here after we decided outside counsel wasn't the way to go. But the way this is structured now, and the way this amendment will keep it structured, the legislature is basically the ones that are in control of what is going on, not the Attorney General's office, who changes quite frequently. So I think we're getting good institutional knowledge. I think we're getting good representation. And I want the legislature involved. I want the legislature, quite frankly, to be in control of what's going on with all the school litigation, the recalibration, and all of that. So I would urge you to support the amendment. Let's keep it going the way it is for now. Maybe after we're through recalibration, this is the thing to do. But don't do it now. Thank you.
Senator Nicholas, for your second
time. Thank you, Mr.
time.
President, for my second time. Folks, this gentleman is an attorney general. By statute, you can only represent and complete this role in that function. The attorney general's office isn't in the executive branch. If you want the institutional knowledge, hire him into the LSO. Bring him into the office. Bring him to into this facility. But believe me, the way the attorney general's office works and the way they work across the land, the way the U.S. attorney's office works, the way your prosecutor's office works, is you take people and you take people that want to be career lawyers, and they become very, very good at what they do. Now, I know the gentleman we're talking about, and he went to law school just like everybody else that went to law school. He wasn't at the top of his class. He wasn't at the bottom of his class. He just studied an area and developed expertise. Anybody could do that. Any lawyer graduating from the University of Wyoming skilled can do that. Now, what these offices do is they look and they find people that are skilled, that can develop the skills, and become career attorneys. And we have career attorneys in our offices over here and over here that are equally good, equally know the knowledge equally well. And they all are being paid at a pay scale. And the morale is not very good if you went and picked out one of the lawyers and said, you know, we just happen to like you and we're going to double your pay. We've got lawyers in the Attorney General's office in the executive branch who are working for the same pay that our lawyers are working. And then the legislature picks out one lawyer and says, you know, here's a lawyer that may not really want to be a career lawyer, so we're going to pay him more to stay. I'm telling you, folks, we can have career lawyers. And part of the problem is we're meddling in it. If you meddle in it, it's not going to work. If you meddle in it, you're not going to have career lawyers wanting to stay there because they're not going to be able to develop the skills and be rewarded if the legislature is going to go out and do the hiring. The Attorney General has and continues to provide very, very good, competent lawyers throughout government. All your tax cases are being held by some of the finest lawyers that I know. And they understand the tax issues that are as much or more complicated than these and doing fine jobs. Judges, the Supreme Court, they love the career lawyers. You watch the U.S. Attorney's Office lawyers, same group of people, same law school, walk into the judges. They're treated with reverence. Those lawyers that are over in the Pioneer Building, I can guarantee you, when they walk into the courtroom, they are treated with reverence because they're treated as career lawyers that have really dedicated their lives to do quality work. And that's what we need. And what we want are career lawyers working up through the AGs, and part of the reward is if you're really good and you work hard, you get to do the school finance case. And part of what was historically wrong is we took that work out and we gave it to outside firms. So if you're a career lawyer working your tail up, just about the time you get to work on a great case, they take it to an outside firm. Said, well, I'm going to have to leave the office. We've changed that. We now have a tort division. They do great work. That tort work used to go out. And I'll tell you what, they're doing as good or have good or better results than the outside lawyers. We were hiring the best firms in town. And these guys are doing just great work, and partly because they're revered. People know that they're there for a cause. This is work that needs to be done by career attorneys, and we should have this expertise built within the office. And we shouldn't be mucking with the system. And when you muck with it, it's not going to work. This lawyer is not going to be here forever. None of us are going to be here. You can't go to one legislator and say, you know, you're the best legislator here. We're going to triple your pay because we can't do without you. You know, any one of us, this body will go on without us. But with respect to the AG's office, it's been working for years. But you can't be taking the litigation out and giving it to outside firms. And you have to build that reservoir of good career lawyers inside the group. And it'll work. And why do we do it now? Because it's timely. And this is the budget session. And all we're simply doing is removing the... Now, this law, nobody's saying you leave or you do anything. It just makes it clear you're in the Attorney General's office, and you have to negotiate your salary with the Attorney General just like every other Attorney General does. And if the Attorney General wants to maintain the salary at that level, have at it.
Fine.
Thank you.
Senator Burns.
On against the amendment, it's a very simple question. Do we want the Attorney General to be the top attorney in the state or not, as he's supposed to be and as he's designed to be? And, Mr. President, I would ask for the yeas and nays on this, please.
Anyone else wish to speak before the sponsor takes a second time? Senator Cove.
Mr. President, my thanks to the good chairman of Appropriations. We've had a great dialogue on this, and we talked at length before this amendment came to the floor. And here I am standing up trying to follow up on that. I don't have the experience that he does, but I can tell you a couple of things. He said this is timely. This isn't timely. We don't have any expertise established anywhere in the Attorney General's office right now. Could we do it? Possibly. Should we do it? Maybe, but not now. It's just not the time. We've got too much at stake here. Tremendous. Tremendous things at stake here. I don't even want to tell you. Well, I can tell you this. With school finance, in 1997, we funded schools at $567 million. This year, $1.4 billion. Not count school CapCon. Recalibration, school CapCon, they're here. Should we change now, change our horse in midstream with recalibration and school CapCon coming up? No. So I'd ask that you support the amendment. It's been a great debate. I feel very strongly about it. I think we're getting a good job done. We won a court case, and I can tell you there are a couple of plaintiff attorneys out there that are waiting for us to stub our toe. We stub our toe here, we're right back down the street. We've got the right representation now. Preserve that. I'd ask that you support the amendment.
Question is, shall third reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 1 pass? Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Elliott?
Aye.
Esquibel?
No.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
No.
Honeycutt?
No.
Jennings?
Aye.
Johnson?
No.
Landon? Larson?
Aye.
Martin?
Aye.
Massey?
No.
Meyer?
No.
Meyer-S?
Aye.
Nicholas?
No.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Ross?
No.
Schiffer?
No.
Scott?
Aye.
Sessions?
Aye.
Townsend?
Aye.
Von Flatern? President Hines.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 17 ayes, 13 noes.
By your vote, third reading amendment number 3 have passed. Mr. Vice President.
Mr. President, may I use the podium up here? Okay, come on up here.
Members of the Senate, it's my pleasure to introduce to you Amy and Michael Mazurek. Last year, I had the great honor of bringing a bill, Senate File 130, which dealt with child abuse penalties. And it addressed a deficiency in the law that needed correcting. Unfortunate situation happened in Cheyenne here to their child by a caregiver. And the child was severely injured. And unfortunately, the law was not able to adequately address the grievous harm that was done. And so our district attorney came to me and asked me to present Senate File 130. And what it did do was increase the penalties for aggravated child abuse to 25 years. It won't necessarily solve their problem, but it will address future problems. And so today, Scott Homar is here and the family is here, and we have a presentation for them, and I'll let Scott Homar say just a couple of words.
Mr. President, members of the 60th Wyoming Senate, my name is Scott Homar. I'm the district attorney here for Laramie County. As Senator Ross said, we are here today really to honor this family and their courage and strength in going through what they have gone through. Little baby Sophia here was dropped off at a babysitter on January 31st, 2008, just like many of us drop off our kids every day. Unfortunately for them, they were called to the hospital. They didn't know what was wrong. Doctors said it might have been a brain bleed. The child was sent down to Denver Children's, where it was determined that the child had been abused severely. Of course, all the eyes went right to the parents, which is what they're trained to do, obviously, and the parents show up at Denver Children's Hospital and look at very accusing eyes. It turns out that the caregiver, the babysitter, Rebecca Nelson, had severely injured the child, beat her, and shook her within an eyelash of her little life. As Senator Ross said, the statutes were not adequate to address this serious bodily injury. If you kill a child, obviously the penalties are severe. If you just hurt them so bad, but do not kill them, We had a 0 to 10 on an aggravated assault. That's the best that we could do. And we couldn't even stack a child abuse on top of that because the statute said we couldn't. So I went to Senator Ross and I said, we need to do something about this. He jumped on it. He helped me draft some legislation. As he said, we now have a 0 to 25 penalty for aggravated child abuse when serious bodily injury is involved. We're here today not only to honor the strength and courage of this family, but also to thank you, members of this fine body, as well as the House, for all that you did in passing this legislation. This plaque that we had made for the Missourics has a letter from the governor to the family talking about their tragedy, as well as a copy of the engrossed and signed bill, and a plaque that says, out of tragedy comes change. And I want to thank all of you for that change. It will make kids of Wyoming safer in the end. And this is for you guys. You don't have to grab it. I'll just give it to you. Thank you. You got your hands full. Thank you very much. We are pleased the Wyoming State Legislature has provided stiffer penalties for aggravated child abuse punishable up to 25 years. Sophia and our family know only too well the amount of pain and suffering an incident of aggravated child abuse can cause. My family and I are forever grateful for the support the military, medical, and local communities have given us over the last few years. Sophia's traumatic brain injury is improving every day, and without everyone's support, we would not have made it through this. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming today. We're honored to have you here and glad that we've accomplished something that will help families in the future. Next amendment for our consideration is third reading amendment number 4 to Senate File 1. Chief Clerk will read in the amendment.
Senate File 1, third reading amendment number 4, budgets affected, section 20, Department of Environmental Quality.
Senator Geis.
Mr. President, I move third reading standing committee amendment number 4, and this goes into the environmental quality, and what this does is it... I'm a little over my head on this. So. But in November 27, 2006, the US EPA issued the final regulations intended to coordinate the Federal Insecticide, Fungicide, and Roticide Act with the Clean Water and Air. And what this amendment does is make, we're going to be able to spend, we need those rules ready so that when our applicators are out there spraying for these different things that they spray for to protect our health, why we have some rules to go by.
Was the amendment moved? Discussion on amendment number 4. Question is, shall third reading amendment number 4 pass? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment has passed. Third reading amendment number 5, Senate File 1. Reading clerk, please read in the amendment.
Senate File 1, third reading amendment number 5, budgets affected, section 48, Department of Health.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move third reading amendment number 5, to the budget bill. Mr. President, this is similar to the amendment that I brought yesterday, except for the funding is reduced to $85,000, and the source of the funding, rather than being the general fund, is the tobacco settlements money, because, of course, Mr. President, that can be used for health issues. Mr. President, I think I did a poor job of talking about this amendment yesterday. Mr. President, this is not a new program. This is a program that's already being undertaken. It's done partly in conjunction with the Governor's Planning Council on Developmental Disabilities, because they have a position on that council that covers this epilepsy outreach. But, Mr. President, that position is going away this year, Mr. President. So the idea is to have a ability to continue throughout the biennium. Excuse me, Mr. President. I'm sorry. Mr. President, it's an amazing thing about Wyoming. We have a prevalence of epilepsy that's way in excess of national norms. And it might be in part because we have so many brain injuries and other things. Epilepsy can be associated with disease, with brain injury, with trauma. And, of course, it can be an inherent condition in and of itself. We're doing a terrible job in our schools of dealing with children with epilepsy. We probably have 10,000 people in Wyoming that are affected, and they could use some help, assistance, and outreach, just like we do for so many other classes of disabilities. But this one has a bit of a special twist to it, and it's the complexities of it and the needs are so great. It doesn't increase anything, doesn't take from the general fund, and it is tobacco settlement money for a very worthwhile program that's already being done, but shortly will not be done unless we pass this amendment.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On against the amendment, once again, folks, there are hundreds and hundreds of groups out there that do equally good work for people that are equally deserving. And there comes a time we have to decide whether or not it's our role as government to fund every one of these groups that are out raising money for specific purposes. It has been tough to make the 10% cuts. And I suppose little by little you can whittle the money back in and say it was there was no reason to make those cuts. There was a reason to make the cuts. And things that lost, things that are out, there was a lot of nice things that we're doing. It just doesn't mean that you can continue doing them forever.
For the discussion on Amendment Number 5, Senator Esquivel.
Mr. President, members of the body, I would ask you to support this amendment. Epilepsy, as a good senator from Fremont County mentioned yesterday, I believe, that it's a disease that's easily misdiagnosed. And on occasion, what happens with some of these infants, especially, is, you get a two-month-old, three-month-old, four-month-old infant that is crying constantly, and the parent or the caregiver is tired. The easiest thing to do in the world is to start shaking those little kids and trying to get them to be quiet. What happens? Fortunately, in most cases, nothing. But in too many cases, the child suffers an injury, and as we just heard, sometimes these children end up in children's hospital. And I think this is a small price to pay for a little bit of education, a little bit of outreach, and hopefully provide some help for some of our more vulnerable citizens. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion on the amendment? Question called for. The question is, so third reading amendment number 5.
Roll call, Mr. President.
Yeah. To Senate File 1, pass. The Chief Clerk, call the roll.
Anderson?
No.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
No.
Case?
Aye.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
Aye.
Dockstader?
No.
Elliott?
Aye.
Esquivel? Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Honeycutt?
Aye.
Jennings?
No.
Johnson?
No.
Landon, Larson, Martin, Massey, Meyer, Meyer-S, Nicholas, Perkins, Peterson, Ross, Schiffer, Scott, Sessions, Townsend, Von Platern, President Hines.
No.
Nicholas, aye to no. Burns, no to aye. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 14 ayes, 16 noes.
Your vote, Senate. Amendment number 5 has failed. Third reading, amendment number 6. Reading clerk, please read an amendment.
Senate File 1, third reading amendment number 6, budget affected, section 48, Department of Health.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move third reading amendment number 6 to Senate File 1. Fellow senators, this is probably going to be one of the more important budget issues we're going to vote on this session. And it's to answer the question whether the state of Wyoming will continue to support an adequate amount of dollars for the care of indigent Wyoming children who seek specialized out-of-state care that is not acceptable to Wyoming providers or hospitals. This was brought to my attention by the Children's Hospital of Denver, which is for sure one of the 5 top primary children's hospitals in the United States, and many of the lists say number 1. It provides most all of the safety net coverage for our Wyoming health care providers and hospitals. They send their most difficult and complex children seeking care not available here in Wyoming. Denver Children's is a place that unfortunately many of you have seen your children or grandchildren visit in times of extreme need. The hospital sees more, treats more, and heals more kids than any hospital in our 7-state region. For several decades, Denver Children's has partnered with the state of Wyoming to help treat and heal most of Wyoming's sick and unfortunate children enrolled in Medicaid. Each year, the hospital averages just under 6,000 visits to provide pediatric specialty care clinics in the state of Wyoming, and in 2009 alone, they saw 1,765 Wyoming children enrolled in Medicaid. So what's the problem? In the state's budget cuts this past summer, which enacted an average 10% cut for most all state agencies, Denver Children's was surprised to receive a 32% cut. A portion of this cut is due to a rebasing of reimbursement rates for hospitals done in the Wyoming Medicaid office. This means the amount of money sent to Denver General in 2010 is scheduled to drop from $8.3 million down to $5.65 million. This amounts to a 32% cut of over $2.65 million. This cut requires Denver General alone to take on a total burden of $3.2 million less than what it will actually cost them to provide care to Wyoming's Medicaid children for 2010. This shortfall has been in effect beginning September 1, 2009, and is continuing through this year. This budget amendment does not provide any relief for that cut. It's a done deal. This makes Denver General have a choice, 2 choices. Either shift the cost burden Wyoming has placed on them to privately insured kids in the region, or in the alternative, end their partnership with the Wyoming Medicaid children and only continue to see our privately insured kids or the kids from families who can afford to pay the costs. And right now, the Wyoming Medicaid office does not have a contingency plan for where these Medicaid kids should go. What's the solution? I believe Wyoming should pass this budget amendment as a show of good faith to the Children's Hospital in the region and keep them in the game with our Medicaid program. The amendment would authorize the governor to negotiate a new rate for all
out-of-state critical care pediatric hospitals, which may include Omaha and Salt Lake. To make sure we continue to have the safety net coverage our primary care system so greatly needs. For the items involving pediatric care and transport costs that they're not otherwise available from in-state providers. And this includes, but not limited to, emergency and pediatric critical care services. The amendment does not add new spending to the Medicaid budget. Rather, focuses on monies available within Medicaid currently, specifically new federal stimulus funds released from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services a couple of weeks ago that will surely give the governor the latitude to address the problem immediately and keep these out-of-state providers in the game. The specific pot of money involves federal clawback monies in Title D prescription drug area, basically a loan mechanism the federal government provides state Medicaid programs that they have forgiven to assist states in these tough budget times. This effort does not compete with the Wyoming providers, and in fact, the budget amendment is supported by the Wyoming chapter of the American Academy of Pediatricians. Why is that? Because these children's hospitals are the safety net for our Wyoming providers and hospitals who have cases too complex for them to resolve themselves, and they need the pediatric specialists to assist.
Fine.
Time? Okay. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Escobel.
Mr. President, members of the body, I would urge this body to do whatever it can to support this proposal that the good senator from Laramie County has presented to you. I don't know how many of you have visited Children's Hospital, and for a matter of disclosure, I have a two-year-old grandson that's presently at Children's Hospital. He's been there for a while. And spent quite a few weekends out there, and there's a lot of kids that are going by there. Tears at your heart. Some kids, are, of course, wheelchair-bound, crutches. Been there at night when I've listened to some of them cry or groan. Children's Hospital does quite a job for children in this area. And, I think it's more than just a matter of good faith. It's a matter of human compassion. I think if we have the means, as hard as it might be, I think there's certainly a matter of humanness, I think, to go into it. I might also add that my grandson is not a resident of Wyoming. He's in Colorado. But certainly there's that emotional attachment, even though there isn't a financial from a state standpoint. But I think for the betterment of the children of the state of Wyoming, I would urge you to consider this proposal. Thank you.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. President. Yesterday's amendment I supported because it had money in it, and I think that this is important to do. I rise against this amendment today, though, because I'm not sure it does anything. If we really want to support these services, then let's put money behind it and make sure the money is there to do that. We got money on the table to be able to do it without dipping into our rainy day account. But this doesn't do it. And, in fact, I think the governor can do this anyway. It's discretionary. He can move money around the budget. If this becomes something that's a priority, he can move money to do that. I think specifically giving him money for this or authority for this program, I get concerned about where else in the budget is he going to get the money. Is he going to take it out of the pharmaceutical program? Will he take it away from developmental disabilities? Will he take it away from the other hosts of programs that are funded in the Department of Health? We just simply don't know. I imagine if we did know, then we can make a determination on what's more important, but we don't. So, let's put the money there if we think it's important. However, I think this is a bad amendment.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, rising on and against this amendment. Mr. President, this does describe what goes on right now, with a couple of exceptions. It's the Medicaid program itself that deals with these issues, and they've dealt with them. They get children transported to Denver Children's, which is a fine institution. So the program is doing it rather than the governor. And second, Mr. President, I'm nervous about the adding the words on line 9 of the amendment without limitation. I'm not quite sure what that means. Does that mean they have to pay them anything they ask? I'm not sure I want to do that. Mr. President, what's going on is we're having a dispute between our Medicaid program and Denver Children's over how much they ought to be paid. And it strikes me as inappropriate for the legislature to get in the middle of that kind of dispute between an executive agency and a single provider. And I would urge us to stay out of that. There are competent organizations that are trying to handle this sort of thing. The existing mechanisms for handling it are there. And let them resolve the dispute. They may find alternate providers who are willing to take us. They may not. They may have to get the price up to get the services. Let the Medicaid program deal with that. They have the authority to do it. They're the ones that should do it, not the legislature.
Senator Nicholas.
I'd like to point out that this same dispute with a 32% reduction is applied and has been applied to providers in state too. It's interesting that we would take take on the fight to try to help the out-of-state providers and leave our own providers suffering from the same dispute. I mean, I suspect the system will work out. It will. The services will be provided. The kids will be taken care of. Unfortunately, as they go through and alter and change these distributions or these payment programs, they often determine that some folks are getting paid too much and they get reduced. Happens. They determine that psychiatrists, psychologists, maybe we were paying you too much, we're going to reduce it, and then you get the 10%. And if you want to go in and take up the fight for every one of those reductions, we're going to have a lot of time on the floor trying to figure out what's right.
Further discussion on Amendment Number 6 for your second time, Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. President. The reason that the in-state providers aren't in this bill is nobody came to me. I didn't hear from anybody. I heard from Denver General because this is a major problem in their abilities down there. And again, right now they have two alternatives. One is, cost shifting. And the other one, and I hope it never happens, is in their partnership with the Medicaid children, only continue to see privately insured kids. Mr. President, I really hate to see our Medicaid payment office play chicken when our Medicaid kids' health in these extreme emergencies is at risk. And I would ask you to do this. This amendment came out of the governor's office. I pulled the amendment yesterday with the $2 million appropriation on request, and this was given to me to sponsor today. So I would ask that you please vote aye.
Question is, shall third reading amendment number 6 to Senate File 1 pass? All in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Motion have failed. We're on third reading amendment number 7 to Senate File 1. Reading clerk, please read in the amendment.
Senate File Number 1, Third Reading Amendment Number 7, Budgets Affected, Section 49, Department of Family Services.
Senator Esquivel.
Mr. President, move Third Reading Amendment Number 7 to Senate File Number 1. And this is
The same amendment I offered yesterday. Hopefully I can do a better job of explaining this, the program to you. I refer to it as the PRP amendment, Prevention, Rehabilitation, Personal Responsibility. As this body knows, some of the groups that we favor the most, that we encourage participation in are clubs like Boy and Girls Club, things of that nature. Why? Because they provide positive role models, because they assist in prevention and rehabilitation of kids that have gone out of their way, and it helps develop personal responsibility. Well, this program is for adults. Just because we become adults, we all of a sudden do not become responsible, and responsible in certain areas. You know, this this amendment is in regard to the father factor that deals with non-custodial parents and teaches them how to become more involved with their families, with their children, how to accept personal responsibility in terms of their child support payments, how to resolve separations in a satisfactory manner rather than turn to alcohol or violence or other negative type behaviors. The Father Factor is a nonprofit group. The funds that we're asking for are all federal funds. And all this amendment does really is just provide some guidance, some direction to the Department of Family Services in terms of proper usage of the funds that they have, that they've received through the block grant. I might also add that, you know, for a number of years, I was a supervisor for the Child Abuse and Neglect Investigative Unit for Laramie County. And I can't tell you the number of times that that I had calls from non-custodial fathers complaining about their ex-wives and how they didn't take care of their children, and they were neglecting them, and they were drinking and all that kind of stuff. And just about all of the cases, these are just individuals that were bitter when an intimate relationship falls apart. Some of these individuals turn to alcoholism, which is a certain amount of self-induced violence. They turn to domestic violence. And this program, I think, it would have been nice to have a program like this to refer some of these individuals that were very hostile, very bitter, very threatening. It would have been nice to have a program like this for some of these individuals. To that extent, Mr. President, I ask that you provide the authority to the Department of Family Services to just continue with this program as they've funded in the past. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion on the amendment? Question is, has the third reading amendment number 7 to Senate File 1 pass? All in favor say aye. Senator Scott, all opposed, no.
No.
Chair is in doubt. All in favor, please stand. All opposed, please stand. Amendment has failed. Third reading amendment number 8. Reading clerk, please read in the amendment.
Senate File 1, third reading amendment number 8. Budgets affected, Section 67, University of Wyoming.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move third reading amendment number 8 to Senate File 1. Mr. President, this and the rest of the amendments I'll be bringing today are language that has been developed with the cooperation of the University of Wyoming in these areas where the private sector is involved with some of their activities. Mr. President, I don't think you need me to read the amendment, but basically prior to the expenditure of any funds, there is an an evaluation of the costs involved, an opportunity for private sector to participate, and in fact an opportunity for the university to continue to do it themselves if the private sector bids are uneconomic. And recall that this is with respect to the NCAR connectivity supercomputer project. I think this is a friendly amendment. This language came directly from the university, and you will see other language and other amendments that are along the same lines.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. With respect to the amendment, I'd urge you to reject this amendment. First of all, there is a dark fiber there that we understand is owned by the state, and they may investigate lighting up that dark fiber. And why not? If you had a building out there that wasn't being used, you go out and use the building first before you go out and decide to lease a building. Secondly, with respect to all items, our bid laws are already in place. If you want to go out and do a purchase services, you're required to go through an RFP process. So we don't need to put in another RFP process on top of the statutes that already exist.
Senator John Von Flederman.
Thank you, Mr. President. I really hope this is the way they do business. I would hope all our state agencies would do business going to seeing what is there in the private sector and getting us the biggest bang for our buck. So if we have to put it in budget, in language, to reinforce that concept, then I'm all for this amendment.
Further discussion for this before the sponsor take his second time? Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. Let's be very careful here. We do have bidding laws that say what happens if you decide to put something out for bid. But what if you don't put it out for bid and you decide to do it yourself? This deals with that situation. This says, university, you have to at least look at private alternatives. You can still go ahead and do it yourself, but those private alternatives don't measure up. That's the purpose. It can only save us money, and it can only benefit the private sector if, indeed, they can do it cheaper than government can. It's a good amendment. Thank you, Mr. President.
Question is, shall third reading amendment number 8 to Senate File 1 pass? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The amendment has passed. The Senate will be in recess for a few minutes, approximately 10 minutes. buttons. Should be automatically, like in my car when I sit down and run off. Ooh, another one. Keep coming, don't they? Senate will come to order. Next amendment for our consideration is third reading amendment number 9 to Senate File 1. Reading clerk, please read in the amendment.
Senate File 1, third reading amendment number 9. Budgets affected, section 205, education school finance.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, I move third reading amendment number 9 to Senate File 1. Mr. President, we had quite a discussion on Tuesday in which the proposal was made to cut back 10% on the transportation budgets for the school districts. The concern with the current status quo is the fact that right now, as the good senator from Fremont County put it, they've got a blank check. There is no accountability. The state is in a position where it has to reimburse 100% of the transportation costs, yet it has no control over what those transportation costs are. On the other hand, the school districts, they get to spend the money, and they have no accountability for it. As I used the comparison on Tuesday, it's not dissimilar than what's caused the crisis in medical care. You've got a third-party payer. So those people who are actually getting the benefit or getting the service have no reason nor incentive to try and restrict their costs in any way. 10% cutback was considered to be too radical. So what this does, what this amendment does, Mr. President, is it freezes the their transportation budget at the amounts that they did this school year for next school year. And, Mr. President, the sponsor and my co-sponsor has said in the past that what it suggests is that you take your money and you spend it more wisely. And the fact that the transportation budgets for the school districts has been going up between 10 and 12% a year over the last number of years, I think gives them plenty of money to deal with without being too drastic and without depriving them too much. That is not the intent of this amendment in any way.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. President. Again, I see no evidence of abuse. If there are abuse, and if it's widespread, we certainly would see evidence. The interim committee reviewed this closely. The education committee is just as effective and competent as any other standing committee here, and we took a very close look at it for the legislature and did not come back with any legislation indicating that something was wrong or there were some abuses or we need to do something about this. Accountability, well, there indeed is accountability and oversight through the Wyoming Department of Education, who has a competent and an effective individual who's quite knowledgeable of transportation issues with the school districts, and there's a great deal of reporting that goes into that, as well as policies with regard to how they can spend their funding. One of the consequences of this is that we're at a low point with regard to gas. Gasoline is probably one of the most expensive items that they use in transportation, and right now I think here in Cheyenne it's down to 2 1/4 a gallon, but everybody knows that's the low point. The price of a barrel of oil is going up all the time. It's likely to go up, it's projected to go up again next year, so you're going to cap their highest item, most expensive item, at the lowest point in what they're having to pay for it, and they're going to pay for it a great deal next year. And finally, Mr. President, the bottom line is we are allowing school districts locally to determine how they can, what kind of transportation they need in order to fulfill the purposes of education. And I guess it comes down to a point of trust. Do you think that they're using that effectively or not?
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, first I'm going to ask for the yeas and nays because I think this is one of the important issues we face with significant dollar implications. I don't know how much, but I think they're significant. I think, you know, no excuse for a cost like this to go up 10, 12% a year every year. That compounds in an awful hurry. And I think we need to start getting an element of local responsibility. As for the price of gasoline, yeah, it's going to go up unless it goes down. I think if we knew where that was going to go, Anybody that knows for sure, you'd be a rich man by the time the session meets again. That is somewhat unpredictable. I think we need to start introducing some elements of control and local responsibility on this cost. Urge adoption of the amendment.
Senator Cole.
Mr. President, you know, one of the things we didn't talk about when we talked about this on Tuesday was the capital outlay side of this budget. And that has gone up significantly. Buses are not, you can't buy them as cheap as you used to be able to. If you look at $66 million out there in transportation, the capital outlay component of that is $13 million, $13 to $14 million. And I submit that that's a lot of the reasons why we've seen the 10, 12% increase. We, as the tall senator from Laramie said, we looked at this thing extensively in the interim. We had the guy down the street who can tell you when the air was changed in most of those tires. I mean, he's that good. He has those numbers. We could not, even after talking to the High School Athletic Association, we could not come up with any recommendations because we think they're doing a pretty good job. But capital outlay side of this $66 million, it is significant. And buses are more expensive, and buses are safer now than they've ever been. I'd ask that you defeat the amendment.
Senator Von Flavin.
Thank you, Mr. President. Standing in support of the amendment, the good tall senator from Laramie County is correct. It was hard. All the abuses we heard were anecdotal stories, misuse of the bus for trips and whatever they were. But you also have to remember it's pretty hard to find abuses when you have an open checkbook. So I stand in support of this.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, I stand in support of the amendment. And understand, nobody is saying it's being abused. I agree that there may be some or may not be some. But there is a significant difference between tracking what's happened in the past and setting a policy that looks at using transportation dollars wisely. And the people that can do that is not someone across the street sitting in Cheyenne checking the air on the tires or whatever he does. He tracks things. Accountability is having your local school districts look at it and say, how can we do it smarter? We've allowed education costs to rise in every sector except this one, roughly between 3 and 4%, about on the low side, 3.2. I support that. That's local districts, local boards, using their money wisely and allocating resources where it's needed in the local districts. What we've never asked them to do is to seriously examine, not just track, not just keep charts and air pressure charts and oil level charts, but to use the money wisely in transportation. We're asking for 1 year, go back and look at what you're doing. That is accountability. It's not a tracking mechanism over across the way. It's local districts stepping up and say, how can we do this smarter? There are brilliant people out there, good leadership in each district. Let them have at it. I think you'll be pleasantly surprised at what they can come up with. I urge you to support the amendment.
Senator Larson.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. I urge you once again to vote against this. What you're saying with this amendment, the way it's constructed, is district, if you were scheduled and you were online to buy a new bus replacement this year, you probably can't do it. Because as was mentioned by the good senator from Park County, capital costs are what is driving all of this. If you pass this amendment, and they didn't have to buy a bus last year, but they're scheduled to get a couple of buses this year, they can't do it and keep it at the same rate. They can't do it. And so this body is then going to decide which districts can and cannot get a new bus. I think that's wrong. I would urge you to vote against it.
Senator Dr. Statter.
Thank you, Mr. President. Well, I stood against the original amendment that this one kind of spun off from because that cut seemed rather deep and quick without some chance to give the districts an opportunity to study the proposal. I don't feel that this one is too far off the mark when you think about what we've had to do with all of our own businesses. Haven't we had to do the same thing with all of our own businesses, make some serious adjustments, go back and see how we're going to be able to do it a little bit better in this economy? I think this is a very fair amendment. Urge your vote yes.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I think this is quite reasonable. And I think in light of some of the times and the uncertainty and the volatility that we face, that we have to use a mechanism like this and many of the components of education to start examining how we can put this thing in more of a glide pattern. And I would ask you to support this amendment. I do think it's reasonable.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. President. I also think it's a reasonable amendment. But my question is going to be, from the time this amendment goes into place in the budget, and everybody knows about it, until the end of the year, how many more trips to the mall in Billings are we going to have?
Senator Massey, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. President. I forgot to get a scorecard out to see which side is winning with regard to our view of the local school district officials. On the one hand, we're told that we're writing them a blank check. There's probably abuse, even though there's no evidence of it, and the interim committee couldn't find it, and Department of Ed can't find it. And none of them are coming forward and indicating that there's abuse, but there must be because we're writing them a blank check. But then on the other side of the ledger, we're saying, these are really good people. You know, let's let them go out and find efficiencies in way of dealing with these things. And I don't think we can have it both ways. My concern is that we're going to start setting policy. Detailed funding policy from the floor of the legislature. And your interim committee, which is the mechanism we have for these kinds of oversight, came back and said we couldn't find any abuses. The folks who look at this day in and day out indicated they can't find any abuses. School folks who were there at these committee meetings didn't come forward and say, hey, listen, we're experiencing these problems. All the data and the reports that are coming in indicate that this is working just fine. And if we want to go after the part of education that has gone up the most since recalibration, we should look at teacher salaries. Yet we celebrate that. Because look what it's done to our teaching workforce in this state. Okay, that's gone up more than transportation has. I don't think we should head down this road, Mr. President.
Further discussion on Amendment Number 9? Senator Burns, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, we're having a good discussion here. The alternative, we've got tight budgets. We're in tight times. That's one of the things we're wrestling with. We've had to slash across the board on a number of departments throughout the state and the state budget. And we're also looking at tight times in schools. It just makes no sense to me, if this amendment doesn't pass, that we're still telling the school districts, oh, by the way, you can still spend anything you want on transportation because we're going to reimburse it 100%. The reason that is not a policy, and the reason that it has come up that way is because of the fact that we as a body never came up with an acceptable policy for reimbursing transportation. It's just something that we never did. Mr. Chairman, good senator from Campbell County mentioned, yeah, of course you're not going to get complaints when you're getting reimbursed 100%. If I can go to the mall and here and I'm going to get reimbursed 100% for anything I spend, you think I'm going to complain about it? And as the good senator from Johnson County also said, it's only for 1 year. It's until we get to the recalibration. It's been going up 10% per year. I think this is a fair compromise to freeze it and have them start thinking and spending their money smarter.
Question yourself. Third reading amendment number 9 to Senate File 1 passed. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Coe.
No.
Cooper.
No.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Elliott.
No.
Esquibel. Geis,
aye.
Hastert,
aye.
Honeycutt,
aye.
Jennings,
aye.
Johnson,
no.
Landon,
aye.
Larson,
no.
Martin,
no.
Massey,
no.
Meyer,
aye.
Meyer S,
no.
Nicholas?
No.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
No.
Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Sessions?
No.
Townsend?
Aye.
Von Flatern?
Aye.
President Hines?
Aye.
Closing vote? Hastert, aye to no. Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 17 ayes, 13 noes.
By your vote, Senate file amendment number, or third reading amendment number 9 has passed. Third reading amendment number 10. Reading clerk, please read in the amendment.
Senate File 1, third reading amendment number 10, budgets affected, section 205, education school finance.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move amendment number 10 to Senate File 1 and ask for your favorable consideration. What this does is, with the issues that we're having, is that there has been some schools that have, they get their entitlement payments, that they receive a third in August, a third in October, and then finally the third by February 15th. Mr. President, school districts with entitlement payments that are 20% or less than the block grant guarantee amount have had cash flow issues between the months of August and November because the county treasurers don't send their large payment to the school districts until November. The advanced entitlement payment needs to reflect current year entitlement payments because if the entitlement amount in the current year is less than 20% of the guarantee amount, the district will still receive one-third in August and one-third in October. And then an example of that would be in Hot Springs County, school district number 1, in 2000 and 2009 to 2010 entitlement payment is $600,000 or 6% of the block grant guarantee. They would not receive the advance payment until the payment were based on the, if it was based on the prior year. That's why we were moving over to the current year. But if the advance entitlement payment were to be based on the current year data, Hot Springs would receive an advance payment of $3.1 million by October 15th. And they would have paid the state back the difference in December because their advance payment exceeds their current year entitlement amount, and it would have resolved their cash flow issue. The need for the loans that the school districts have had to do arises. The local district resources have near 100% of their foundation guarantee from the state. When this happens, nearly all of the school district funds are received in two payments, one in November and one in May. The school district is allowed to save 15% of its reserves at the fiscal year end on June 30th. Or less than 2 months' expenses, which does not allow the districts to have adequate cash flow to make regular payments for payroll and accounts payable through the 5 months until the first local property tax payment is received in November. Mr. President, this situation does not represent budgetary mismanagement in the local school boards and administration. Even with balanced annual budgets and maximum reserves, the cash needs for operation is simply not available throughout the year under the current funding structure. This forces school districts nearing recapture status to borrow funds and pay costs of issuance with funds that are not resourced in the funding model. One of the districts that I know, Mr. Chairman, or Mr. President, has had in excess of $50,000 of issuance costs over the past year. What the amendment does is, and it seems lengthy, but what it does is it provides a mechanism for the districts to get the funding in a more timely manner based on current year funding model practices, Mr. President. And then what we are trying to do here is that if when they get the payments based on the current year funding models and then there's an overpayment to the districts, there's a mechanism in here that in December that they would repay with interest up to 6%. But the department can make a recommendation to the treasurer on as far as the interest amount, but just not to exceed 6%. Mr. President, this is just should be cost neutral. If the district does not receive all of their funds that they had calculated, then by February they would get the rest of their entitlement payment. This is just simply a mechanism to attempt to get the district's funds in a manner when so they don't have the cash flow issues that they've experienced over that longer period of time, Mr. President. And I ask for your favorable consideration.
Further discussion on the amendment? Senator Cove.
Well, Mr. President, I'm not totally sure I understand why. This is the first I've heard of this problem out there as your chairman of education. I haven't had districts kicking my door down, you know, telling me we got to support this. Maybe it's a good amendment. Maybe it's not. I can tell you that I think we allow districts to keep up to 15% in reserves. And there's a lot of money out there in reserves, a lot of money. Even the small districts have reserves. Vote this amendment up, vote it down. I'm not quite sure what it really does, but I can tell you when money starts getting distributed at a bigger pace with more money involved, that goes back and affects cash flow from something else. So remembering that taxes are collected in November and May. So if you want to vote for this amendment, go ahead. I'm not quite sure why we're doing it, but vote it up or vote it down.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd urge you to defeat the amendment, and partly because I'm not 100% sure what's happening, but I think what happens is something like this. Folks, we actually give most districts an advance payment on their foundation amounts. So in August, you get to receive the enough money that would allow you to operate clear to November, maybe even to March. And the districts are receiving those monies. They get to take the money, and they put it in their local banks, and they actually make a little interest on it. If you're only making 1%, it's not very much money. But getting the front payment from the state is of a benefit to the districts, whatever interest they can negotiate from their banks. What I'm hearing, I think, is that there are some districts because of the that may not get as much on their front-end payment because they have enough local resources to do it, but their local resources may not arrive until property taxes are paid in November and February. And historically what happened, you go out and you acquire a loan for 4 or 5 months, so you borrow the money, and the banks give you the money, and then when your payments, your taxes come in, you pay off the loan. If that's the action that's being taken, then we ought to take a look at it. But there is a way to address that. We would just create, we could make the state the lender, and you go to the state and borrow the money. Having said that, you need to know more information as to make the decision whether to support this. There's just not enough information being supplied to know whether it's an appropriate amendment for whatever purposes. And you need to know what is their cash flow, when are they receiving the payments, when are they getting their foundation payments, what are they getting their foundation payments. And it's a great topic for to take up in the recalibration, but not on third reading.
Further discussion on amendment number 10. For your second time, Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. President. And yet the districts do, and it from the information that I have, they do have some reserve money. The problem has been is that some of these districts have bumped into and exceeded their reserves, and there hasn't been another mechanism out there for them to get, a loan from the state or get other monies, and they've ended up having shortfalls. And this is just a one-year amendment, just a one-year footnote to allow for a mechanism to get the districts the money that they need. And it's just, and I know, like I said, I agree that it seems lengthy, but it's just what staff tells me is necessary as far as what's needed to put the mechanism into place. It's just a simple mechanism of getting the money to the districts in a timely manner and using it on the current year's assessment, and then simply providing for it if there's an overpayment to the district, This district is required to pay the state back with interest. So there's nothing hidden. There's nothing else involved in it. It's just a way of getting resources, because the districts aren't, they don't always, I mean, there's a lot of unforeseen expenses that districts incur that are totally out of their control. And, Mr. Chairman, I agree that this should go to an interim and could be looked at, and that's why this is only 1 year allowed on this footnote. Thank you.
Question is, shall third reading amendment number 10 to Senate File 1 pass? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The amendment has failed. Third reading amendment number 11. Reading clerk, please read in the amendment.
Senate File 1, third reading amendment number 11. Budgets affected. Section 6, administration and information.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move third reading amendment number 11 to Senate File 1. Members of the Senate, this is about the liquor buildings facility that's out by the refinery. We've had a lot of discussion in the last week about this, about how to fund building it, whether we should do it with a, you could call it whether it's a tax or an increase in fees, whatever you want to call it, to the liquor dealers and ultimately to the consumer, or whether we should do it out of funds that we have available for these kind of projects. What this amendment does, Mr. President, is say, let's don't do it at all. And I struggled with how to do this and why to do it. And so what I did is I took a little trip with my good colleague from Washakie County. We went out to the Liquor Commission building yesterday. And we were only there for a little bit, and we didn't do anything we shouldn't have done. I want you to know that. But what I saw, and I want to share this with you, is I saw a very well-run agency. They didn't know we were coming, had no clue. We walked in, and the lady that was sort of the receptionist had her coffee, and she just filled it on her computer. And we walked in, and she was cleaning that up, and the director, the manager of it, was out in the warehouse making sure things were running smoothly, so he had no idea what was going on. And here we show up, and anyway, he came out, and we spent some time with him, and we went and looked at the facility. Of course, you have to understand that this is February, and it was the middle of the week, so it's not the time when a lot of people in Wyoming would imbibe on alcohol and do those kinds of things, because it's not the holiday season, and Wednesday is not a big traffic day. But what we saw was everything was working fine, and it's well run. He did talk about there are times during the year when it gets a little crowded, and I certainly think that's probably the case. And I asked him, well, what about the future, and what do you think are the needs? And there is a need. Is it today? Is it next year? Is it the following year? You know, you'd have to ask him. I'm not going to put words in his mouth, but I felt there wasn't. I didn't think that it was something we had to jump on right now. Then I looked at, just from a business perspective, in my life, what I do, if I need a, if I had to add space to a warehouse or space to a shop or whatever, and obviously you expand, and I looked at the building, and I looked at a big vacant lot out there, and there's a tremendous amount of room for an expansion, which would be much less expensive than what we're talking about doing with this one. But then I started thinking about it, and the question that you have to ask yourself is, do we want to have a decision made by this body that deals with how we spend our money today, or do we want to have the big picture on where we're going to be in the next 50 years? Because the state has money, the private sector doesn't, to try to take advantage of good deals. You know, to me, and it's just the way I think and the way I've been trained, I would rather today be very responsible in how we spend the money. Let's really assess the need, and then let's look at if we really want to do it. Well, maybe we should do an expansion. The flip side of that is you know, it's been represented to us that there's another property and it's a good deal. Then you ask yourself, well, what are we going to do with this existing 100,000 square foot of space? And then this other property we go to, we have to add a bunch of offices to. There's just a lot of things involved in this, and it's hard to come down here in 3 weeks and try to just step in and tell people what to do. They've been working on it for a long time. But these are some questions I had. And then the other thing is, if in fact this is such a good deal on this other building, when I look at it, there's going to be a lot of other space that they're going to use for other government. Plus, we may not sell the building we have. why should we put that on one sector or allow them to or put the burden of paying for it all when they don't receive all the benefits? I just think it's something that we probably shouldn't do. And if it's if the need's there in a couple of years, we can look at the expansion. We've got great people. The last thing, Mr. President, is if we do have an expansion and then we do have some work, then we're going to get some business and some opportunity for some Wyoming jobs. So it's just a matter of what this body wants to do. I think if you want to be conservative in the spending today, you probably would, let's say, let's don't do it. If you're taking the position that, you know, today is the day to build for the next 50 years and we got the money and it's different than the private sector, you got the money, you spend it, then I would defeat this. Either way, let's be sure we don't put it all the expense on this on one segment of our state.
Senator Cove.
Mr. President, rising in support of the amendment. I think that as we go through this difficult time with our budgets, we look at revenue projections out there 2, 3, 4 years, to go back home to our constituents and say, you know, we did a great conservative job, except we decided to buy a new liquor warehouse for $12 million. How do you feel about that? I think it sends the wrong message. I support the amendment. Just because it's a good deal now, there'll be other good deals out there somewhere if we really need it and we have the money to do it. But I support this amendment. It sends the wrong message back home.
Senator Nicholas.
No, I have an industrial facility over in Laramie that cement prices are down. They're struggling across the nation. I spent the last couple of years convincing them to go out and acquire a piece of property now because the price was down and they needed reserves. And you know what? They ultimately made the decision because it was a 100-year decision. These buys, these opportunities don't necessarily come to you when you want them. And if you're a strong company, you begin to say, well, here's a piece of property that was never available for yesterday. In fact, 2 years ago, property might have cost them $8 million. And it's substantially less in this market for a variety of different reasons. So when they looked at it for the 100-year picture, it was easy to make the decision. And timing wasn't right. But if you wait till the timing's right to when you need it, odds are you're going to have to be faced with somebody to buy a piece of property that is going to cost you 4 or 5 times as much. Now, the existing facility has a number of problems. There aren't enough truck bays in it. It's not ideally suited for what's there. It's going to require expansion. And I agree, if your horizon is 5 years or 10 years, then we shouldn't be buying it. But if your horizon is 50 years to 100 years, and then you start to look at what your needs are, and then when you see opportunities, you take advantage of them to save money. And I think that all of our decisions have to be made on a 50 to 100-year horizon. These decisions will go well beyond our lifetimes. And here we have a piece of property in a new developed area close to an interchange. That's a building that's designed for this purpose. We have a building we know we're at capacity, not really designed for the facility, not enough truck bays, not enough capacity. We're hitting near 100% capacity in the during the holidays. My colleague agrees that if you look down the horizon, you know it's not going to be adequate. If you're going to start expanding to an older facility, we're having the same decision with schools. Do you replace a school or do you remodel it? In this instance, our construction manager, a gentleman came out of our ranks here, very conservative, said, you know, this is a good buy. And it may not be the perfect time, but we bought it because the opportunity was here. We'll save dollars in the future. What do we do with the old building? We don't know yet. But we don't have, we're sitting in, at any given time, the state has a lot of resources that aren't expended or sold, and we can be patient. We can wait till the market comes up on that property because we don't have to convert it tomorrow. We'll be wise about what we do. We may end up using it for storage. We are leasing storage space as we sit here today. But again, I'd urge you to look out to the horizon. This is an opportunity, and it's going to save money when we take advantage of it when the market is down, and we do have the resources to buy it no matter how we choose to buy it. And no matter how we decide at the end of the day to assign the cost, the acquisition of the building is a good long-term investment.
Senator Case.
Mr. President, I have a conflict on this amendment because I'm a liquor dealer in the state of Wyoming, at least the corporation that I'm president of is. But I'd like to exercise my privilege to talk to the issue. I do know firsthand about buying liquor from the state of Wyoming. And I will say that the service is extraordinary. It's an amazing system. That's why no one wants to change it in Wyoming and go to get rid of the state warehousing of liquor, because the small dealers, like my operation, get the same price that big dealers do. That's why we really love it. But the service is absolutely phenomenal. You can call up, and if you get your liquor order in before a certain time of the day, and I believe it's noon or 1 o'clock, it will be on a truck at your back at your place the next day, the very next day. And they don't say during the holidays, we're busy, we're so busy, can we give you two-day service? You know, and if they said it has to be two-day notice on service, I'd be able to order liquor two-day notice, and if that would get rid of the problems on the trucks and the bays, I'd probably take that trade-off. I'd trade two-day service for not spending this money. You know, I think the liquor dealers are frustrated because we've been paying the markup all along, and it's a tax. And you know, whenever you say Wyoming has low liquor taxes, they really don't when you compare the markup to the actual plus the tax. And they're really both taxes in my mind. I think on beer there's absolutely an argument, but the state of Wyoming doesn't distribute beer. You get that from beer distributors. So, but they give fabulous service. I've never heard any complaints. The only complaint ever offered is about wines because we don't refrigerate and have climate cooled. It gets pretty hot in that warehouse. And that only affects wines. That's the only thing the liquor dealers I've ever heard complain about in terms of service or ability to get product. In fact, we've liberalized our laws and allowed for direct shipment of wines and things so that they don't have to warehouse so much if they don't want to carry it. I don't think there's a single liquor dealer that you've heard from that says they want this for the benefit of their business. And I do have a conflict on this bill, but my privilege is to speak to it. That's our laws, or our rules in this House.
Further discussion on Senate file, third reading amendment, number 11. Ready for the question? The question, Senator Bebout. Second time.
Thank you, Mr. President. For my second time, I won't belabor this, and I, too, am involved as a family member of a business that's involved with a liquor license. However, I think I'm a class of persons, and I am going to vote on this and intend on voting on this. The one thing that I would go back to, and we talk about it being a good deal, and I'm not going to argue whether it is or isn't, but something strikes me as sort of odd that we talk about the private sector and what we do, and yet it's a good deal for government. And what about the private sector? How would you feel if you were thinking about moving to Wyoming and needed a big storage warehouse and you went out to try to negotiate it, to buy it, and then the guy says, well, I've got the government already talking to me and they've got all this money, and you know, what do you say? Well, you probably would not be too involved in it. And I've seen that happen, and it's not a good idea when government has the money and they try to compete with the private sector for spaces that the private sector would like to have. And the last thing I would mention is that usually this body, when there's an issue, we hear from people about it, and I have not heard from any liquor dealers, and my colleague from Fremont County talked about the wonderful service they provide. They do. And I think if they were not providing that service, we certainly would hear about it. So I would ask that you support this amendment.
Question is, shall third reading amendment number 11 to Senate File 1 pass? Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
No.
Case?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Elliott?
No.
Esquibel?
No.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
No.
Honeycutt?
No.
Jennings?
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Larson.
Aye.
Martin.
No.
Massey.
Aye.
Meyer.
No.
Meyer-S. Nicholas.
No.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
No.
Schiffer.
No.
Scott.
No.
Sessions.
No.
Townsend.
Von
Slatern?
Aye.
President Hines?
No.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 15 ayes, 14 noes, 1 conflict.
By your vote, Amendment number 11 has passed. Senator Bebov?
Mr. President, I like what you said, but I think it failed.
On a amendment, it doesn't have to have the majority of the members or not. It has to.
Point of order.
What did I say? I said it passed. On this item. Conflict. I am informed that a conflict does not count as a no, and this vote does not require a majority of those elected. It requires a majority of those on the floor voting. Therefore, it had 15 aye votes, 14 no votes, and it has passed. Third reading amendment, number 12. Reading clerk, please read in the amendment.
Senate file 1. Third reading amendment number 12, budgets affected. Section 6, capital construction.
Senator Meyer.
President. Mr. President, this is more or less on the same issue as the liquor warehouse. Basically, this amendment just says, first of all, I'd ask the reading clerk to read it in. Is it read in?
Yes, it's
okay,
read
I
in.
Would move second read. Oh, third reading amendment number 12 to Senate file 1 and ask for your favorable consideration. This amendment just allows half of the funds to be paid for as a surcharge and the other half of the funds to be paid for by the state. So that's basically what it does.
Puts it back in the budget bill.
Further discussion on amendment number 12. The question is, shall third reading amendment number 12 to Senate file 1 pass? Chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
No.
Bebout.
No.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
No.
Coe.
No.
Cooper.
No.
Dockstader.
No.
Elliott.
Aye.
Esquibel. Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Honeycutt.
No.
Jennings.
No.
Johnson.
No.
Landon.
No.
Larson.
No.
Martin.
No.
Massey.
No.
Meyer.
Aye.
Meyer S. Nicholas.
Aye.
Perkins.
No.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
No.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Sessions.
No.
Townsend.
Aye.
Von Slatern.
No.
President Hines?
No.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 10 ayes, 19 noes.
By your vote, third reading amendment number 12 have failed. Third reading amendment number 13. Reading clerk, please read in the amendment.
Senate file 1, third reading amendment number 13, budgets affected, section 6, capital construction.
Mr. Vice President.
President, I move third reading amendment number 13 to Senate file 1, ask for your favorable consideration. Same topic, folks, but a different approach. The approach of this amendment is to take and fund the liquor warehouse out of the budget reserve account. And it's pretty simple. If we need it, and I do believe we need to take advantage of these times to buy this building, but I'm suggesting that we do it up front, and we do it through the budget reserve. I would ask for your favorable consideration.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President, and on and for the amendment. Folks, this deletes the payback obligation, the no payback obligation of the dealers. It just says this is a state resource, a state obligation. We'll recover our profits through the 17% that we tack onto onto our products. So now what you're simply doing is saying, is it appropriate to spend out of the general fund or the budget reserve account? If you look at the profile, there is adequate funding in the profile to pay for this. It's a wise decision to buy this now for the long haul. The new building will solve a lot of problems, and I don't doubt that the existing facility is working per day. But it's an old building, been around for a long time. It's going to have to be replaced, and it's going to be a lot more expensive if we don't take advantage of the present market. You've heard folks get up and talk about why we should be building schools right now because the prices are down, contractors are hungry. And the same logic applies to here. Here's a resource that we know we're going to have to expand or replace. And by spending the money now, we will save a lot of more money down the road. I'd urge you to support the amendment.
Further discussion? Question is, shall third reading amendment number 13 pass? Chief Clerk, recall the roll.
Anderson? Bebout? Burns?
Aye.
Case? Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
Dockstader?
No.
Elliott?
Aye.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Honeycutt?
Aye.
Jennings? Johnson?
Aye.
Blandin?
No.
Larson?
No.
Martin?
Aye.
Massey?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Meyer-S?
No.
Nicholas?
Aye.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Ross?
Aye.
Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Sessions?
No.
Townsend?
Aye.
Von Flatern? President Hines?
No.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 15 ayes, 14 noes, 1 conflict.
By your vote, reading amendment number 13 has passed. Third reading amendment 14 to Senate file 1. Reading clerk, please read in the amendment.
Senate file 1, third reading amendment number 14, budgets affected, section 6, administration and information.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. President. Unless all of my colleagues would like to discuss this a little bit further, I'm going to withdraw this amendment.
Amendment number 14 is withdrawn without objections. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move that the Senate be at recess until 2 p.m.
Announcements. Senator Burns.
President, your committee number six, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will meet up in S-14 at 12:15, where we will take up House Bill 77, Youth Archery Licenses, House Bill 47 and Gross, NEPA and ESA Review, and House Bill 95 and Gross, Wyoming Firearms Freedom Act, number 2.
Senator Geis.
Number 5, Agriculture, Public Land, Water Resources. We'll meet up on adjournment tonight. Don't ask me what time. And we'll take up H.A.R. 10, Resolution Primary Primacy of Wyoming Water Rights, House Bill 122, Disposal of Livestock, House Bill 114, Partition Fences, House Bill 54, Wyoming Food Freedom Act.
Senator Cove.
Mr. President, Committee Number 4, we'll take up two bills they did not finish this morning on adjournment, that being House Bill 39, Engrossed Insurance Benefits, Usual, Customary, and Reasonable, and House Bill 125, Engrossed Subdivision, Separately Acquired Property.
Senator Von Fleteren.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, will meet at 8:30 tomorrow morning, room S-13, that's 8:30 Friday morning, to take up House Bill 19, Engrossed Mandatory Savings Accounts for Inmates, House Bill 115, Specific Purpose Excise Tax Voter Petition, House Bill 89, Engrossed Resident Contractor Preferences. Thank you, Mr.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee Number 1, Judiciary, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. in S-1 to consider the following bills: House Bill 80, Peace Officers, Detention Officers, and Dispatchers; House Bill 36, Notaries; House Bill 75, Loss of Parental Rights, Homicide of Spouse; House Bill 83, Crimes and Offenses, Restrictions for Adult Sex Offenders; and if time permits, House Bill 20, Criminal Street Gangs; and House Bill 91, Governmental Immunity Waiver for Hospital Whistleblowers.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, your Revenue Committee Number 3 will meet almost immediately up in S-16. To take up House Bill 29, Engrossed Taxation of Specified Digital Products; House Bill 44, Engrossed Taxation of Property Used for Economic Development; House Bill 70, Engrossed Vacant Land; House Bill 67, Engrossed Data Processing Center Sales Use Tax Exemption; and House Bill 78, Engrossed Natural Gas Taxation. Mr. President, we may not take those bills in that particular order.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee Number 9, Minerals, will meet tomorrow, Friday, February 26th, 15 minutes after the noon recess in S-18, to consider the following bills: House Bill 94, Real Property Easements; House Bill 72, Engrossed Regulation of Wind Energy Facilities; House Bill 106, Engrossed Small Business Investment Credit; House Bill 97, Nuclear Energy Production Study; House Bill 79, Engrossed Eminent Domain Wind Power Collector Lines, if time permits; and if time permits also, House Bill 59, Engrossed Workforce Services Amendments.
Senator Nicholas.
Appropriations will meet after adjournment today to consider House Bill 118, Engrossed Aquatic Invasive Species; House Bill 61, Engrossed Legal Services Funding; House Joint Resolution 4, Mandatory Judicial Retirement. Any other bills that have not been scheduled and that we receive today will be considering tomorrow morning beginning at 8 a.m. And then if there are any bills with funding that come out during the lunchtime, the JAC will then leave during adjournment at 2 o'clock tomorrow, go up and consider and bring the bills right back.
Senator, to the
majority. Mr. President, so folks, and particularly committee chairman and others, can plan in these really tight schedules. There'll be no adjustment in regard to our times tomorrow. We'll take up at a normal time. We'll try to get a normal noon hour. We'll try to get a reasonable adjournment. So as, given the last day for bills in committee a chance, we're going to just allow the schedule to play itself out tomorrow. Then Monday, it's a whole different ball game because on Monday there will be the last day for committee on the whole. So if you're making any kind of plans, Monday all day, all bets are off. It's apt to be an early start, a short lunch hour, and a long stay in the evening in order to do our share on that day. So with that, go forth and do good work.
You've heard the motion that the Senate shall be in recess until 2 p.m. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate is in recess.